Blog Talk Radio.
It's showtime.
Greetings and welcome to Tag Do About Your Dog and You. Tag Do is capital area, God. Dog users. It's a show about guide dogs that help blind people become more independent, have dignity, and also be productive in their everyday active life. Tag Do is about people that have guide dogs. And we talk about all areas of having service animals. And we have more than 100 members that live in Washington, D.C., Northern Virginia, Prince George County, Maryland, Montgomery County, Maryland, and also Southern Maryland. So, CAG Do About Your Dog and You. I am your host, Reverend Radio Ray Razor, and I have my number 7th guide dog, which is named Miss Raven. She's a female German Shepherd. That's a coated German Shepherd, which is rare German Shepherd. Only 5% of all Shepherds born is a coated German Shepherd. And that means basically that they're a little more intelligent, they have longer hair, and they got little big ears. So, again, this is Tag Do About Your Dog and You. And good afternoon, and how are you doing today, Miss Renee?
Well, Reverend Ray, like everybody else, I was glued to my television set yesterday watching history being made. But I have a question, and I can't find anybody can give me an answer. Is there an age limit on when you can wear Chuck Taylors and pearls? I just don't know.
I don't think it's an age limit on it, but I do think it's how successful and status that you are. But that was interesting to see our vice president, no longer elect, our vice president, Miss Sister Kamala Harris, that is something special and historic. You know, it's hard to believe that we're in the year 2021 and we have all these firsts. I mean, first black woman vice president, just all these firsts. I mean, you would think after all these years, there wouldn't be a first, it would be a normal. But that's a whole nother show, I would believe. So, Ms. Renee, I could just feel the whole, feel it. I mean, just something shift. You know, just something shift when the formal president became formal, and just that time when he was sworn in, our new president, and I call him Uncle Joe, because man, just feel like somebody you can depend on, something that when you wake up in the morning or go to bed at night, it's not going to be some explosive craziness going on. You know, everybody wanted this excitement 4 years ago, but I think we didn't have enough excitement. I think now we just want to know, everything is just normal. I think we want to try to get back to normal. And I think just people just let out a breath, you know, oh, this is over with now. And Mr. Biden, President Biden's not going to have all the answers, which nobody's going to have all the answers. And I like him saying, you know, we in this thing together, and we didn't get here in a short period of time, so it's not going to take a short period of time to get out of this. But at least he has a plan. Might not be the best plan, but he has a plan, and we can work from that. So anyway, so Ms. Renee, give us the lineup for today.
We begin our show with Stop Dogging Us Around, the good, the bad, and the ugly of using a dog guide. And our guest is Nicole Williams, Maryland State Delegate representing District 22. She has introduced House Bill HB 234, Harm to Service Animals. And what does this mean to the thousands of trained animals and their handlers in Maryland and beyond? We'll find out. In our second half, we peer into Charlie's Corner. So that's our show. Back over to you, Reverend Radio Ray.
All right. Thank you. And the bad, the good, and the ugly of using a service animal. And I'm going to roll all this up in this. I heard some statistics. Statistics that in the United States there's 7,300,000 blind persons, which I'm sure is more than that because blind people don't want to let you know they're blind. So there's a lot of them, and they, some of these people are driving and stuff and they can't hardly see. And we know some of them people. But anyway, be that as it may, there's over 7 million blind persons in the United States, and of that is a large percent of adults. And of that, adults that do not use a service animal, 90% of blind people are unemployed, and those who are employed, only 4% of them, 75% of them make over a little under $4,000. Now, what's interesting in that is only 3% of blind people have the ability to use a service dog, and that's because using a service dog requires you to have good mobility, excellent cane travel skills, what they call mental mapping, that we're like, you know where you're going and all that. Cause most people think when you have a guide dog, you just say, hey, take me up to 7-Eleven, the dog just run up there. No, it don't work like that. So anyway, but of that 3% that use guide dogs, it's reverse in terms of employment. 90% or more of people use guide dogs are employed. Families have a social life and have an active life because a dog just gives you much more independence. It makes you feel more, it just gives you confidence. It makes you feel good about yourself as a human being. And that's just what's so important. And a bad thing about it is that a lot of, it's not easy getting a guide dog. We have about 15 different guide dog schools in the United States. And believe it or not, we have a long backlist of people that's applying for guide dogs because a guide dog can cost anywhere that from the time that it's bred, raised, it could be price tag on it could be anywhere from $60,000 to $100,000, depends on the dog. And even though a lot of these dogs are given, free because the schools and all give, donations and all, still just being able to train a dog and a service animal, a lot goes into it. So it's not a lot of people that have service animals around the country. So, so that is a very, very special thing. But anyway, be that as it may, I just wanted to point out that having a service animal is just, so important. And the ugly part of it is 40% of people that have service dogs have been attacked one time or another. And some dogs have, and you think that this dog has been bred, trained, special training and all, socialized by a family for, about 12 months and all. And then if that dog get attacked and the owner, then that dog's out of operation. And some dogs get attacked to the point that they can't even use the dog anymore. Or some dogs just psychologically cannot be used anymore. So then you didn't invest $60,000 to $100,000 into a service dog. It's not like, you can go get a rental car from Hertz or someplace, if your dog is attacked and you attacked. I mean, you can't just go get another dog if you're a person that works every day and you rely on that dog that service dog to take you to work. And then all of a sudden the dog is attacked by another dog and injured or something. And the cost of the injury, I just had a friend that a dog was attacked and the dog cost him like $12,000 for hospitalization, and then he couldn't use the dog. So you can't just all of a sudden go up and get another dog, because it takes anywhere from 3 weeks to a month to train with another dog. Then it takes 6 months for a dog and you to start having a working partnership. So that's why it's so important, and we really appreciate the fact that we're going to have this protection bill come about. And they have regular, you know, dog misdemeanors, if a dog attack a person, something like that. But having a service dog, we need to have a little more teeth into a protection bill. And I know Maryland did not have a protection bill for service dogs, and D.C. does not have one. Virginia has one, but it's not that strong. So that's why we felt it so that we just bless them. And I did not realize for such a long time they've been trying to get a bill in Maryland for, because we have a number of people in Maryland that use service dogs. So when I got my recent dog about a year ago, and I became the president of CAGDU, which I am, about your dog, CAGDU guide dog users here in this area, I got a call from CNI Guide Dog School, and I used to work with them for a couple of years as a national field rep going all over the country talking about service dogs. And they asked me, they said, Reverend Ray, would you please see if you all can get something going about having a guide dog protection law? And I said, well, you know, I just happened to be associated with this wonderful, wonderful woman that's a became delegate, and I'm just going to ask her about it, maybe just, you know, divine providence. She became delegate. I knew her a little bit from another organization in Greenbelt, Maryland, the Democratic Club, Eleanor Roosevelt Democratic Club. So maybe, you know, that can happen. So as a blessing, she was kind enough to take that up, put this bill in. I have letting some of the different blind organizations know about it, American Council of the Blind, National Federation of the Blind, IB, a lot of groups, and they're so thrilled about it. So we have her today as our guest. So that segment of a lot of information, that segment was sponsored by the Big Bad Wolf, which is a sponsor that sponsors that segment. Big Bad Wolf is a pet store that's located in Maryland. And the Big Bad Wolf, go to that bigbadwolf.com. And, boy, that wolf is spelled W-O-O-F, wolf, wolf. And I mean, they have top pet food for dogs and cats and those other little things that run around in those gerbils. And also, please check them out. And you can call them at 202-747-3434, 202-747-3434, the Big Bad Wolf. And you can let Miss Penny, when you call up there, she's the owner, let her know you heard about it on CAGDU about your dog and you. And now we're going to go over and have Miss Renee introduce our very, very special guest.
Well, again, we want to welcome Maryland State Delegate from District 22, Nicole Williams. She has introduced House Bill 234, Harm to Service Animal. And we'll be here today to talk to us what it means to the thousands of handlers who use trained animals. Now, we're right up against the break, but we'll get a chance to greet her. So, Reverend Ray, give her the old CAGDU welcome.
Good afternoon, Miss Nicole. How are you today?
I am good. Thank you so much for having me today. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you. And we always say, well, you already a friend, but we always tell people when they first come on our show that they are like a guest. We open the door for them. We welcome them. We take their coat off, hang it up. We give them a glass of water. But after that, they come in when they want to. They sit where they want to. They no longer a guest. They are family, and you know how you treat family. But anyway,
yes.
so on the other side, we're going to bump out the back. On the other side, we will get to know you.
Okay.
You are listening to CAGDU About Your Dog and You. CAGDU stands for Capital Area Dog Guide Users. We are located in the nation's capital, Washington, D.C., Maryland, and Virginia, but the information we share is for dog guide users everywhere. And back to our host, Reverend Radio Ray Razor, and our special guest, Nicole Williams, Maryland State Delegate.
All righty. Nicole, what I want to start out with, please, is, you can go on the Internet now to find out what a delegate does. You can go on the Internet and find out, a lot of the information. But a lot of things that people always ask us, who is the people behind these things that get done? So we want you to share with us. Who you are? Who is Miss Nicole? I mean, we read about you. I got to know you a little and all, but tell us then. I mean, did a stalk drop you off? You come out of Cabbage Patch? So share with us who Miss Nicole is and where did she come from?
Yes, well, thank you. Actually, it's funny you mentioned Big Bad Wolf. Which is in D.C., kind of in the Tacoma Park area, because that's actually where I grew up. And so I've been there before. My mom still lives not a couple blocks away from there, but that is my old neighborhood where I grew up as a little girl. I was born and raised in Washington, D.C., raised by a single mom, and I always say I'm a proud product of the D.C. public school system. Went to Duke Ellington School of the Arts in D.C., and so when I tell people that, they always are like, oh, my God, what was your art? And so I cannot draw. I'm going to tell you that right now. I cannot draw a lick. but I was a music major. I played violin and viola at Duke Ellington. And before I went to Duke, I was a member of the D.C. Youth Orchestra as well. And been around music really all my life, whether it's in the church, singing in the choir, or my uncle was really into jazz and actually at one point was the music director for WPFW in Washington, D.C. And so I remember whenever I would go over my uncle's house, there'd be all types of jazz musicians there. And as a little girl, you didn't really realize that, like, I met Herbie Hancock and all types of other musicians as a little girl, but just music is another passion of mine, but I decided to take my passions and also segue them into politics and just really just trying to really be a person to effectuate change in our community. And so after I graduated from Duke Ellington, I went to University of Pittsburgh for undergrad and also went there for law school. And then after graduating, yes, I'm a Pitt Panther. and then afterwards moved back home, and that's really just kind of how I got involved in politics. One of my friends.
Let me stop you there before you move.
Okay.
It's a small world. Duke, me and Miss Renee are Duke Ellington parents. Our daughter went to Duke Ellington. And now she lives in Las Vegas. She was a triple threat. She sang, danced, and act. Really, really interesting. It is a small world. And Pitt, we have a friend. I don't know if you know that the oldest living black Olympic holder that's still living was a graduate of Pitt in 1948. His name is Mr. Douglas, and he's the oldest living black athlete that holds a medal, and he got that in 1948. And what's interesting about him is that his father was the first black person to get a service animal in 1930. So I'm sure it's such a small world. But now let's move to your political. How did a black
Just before we move to the political, because you can go on the internet and find out everybody's business, I noticed that you're a member of Delta Sigma Theta, commonly shortened to Delta, and they just celebrated Founders Day, January 13th. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Now, Delta's had a strong history of public service and social activism. Did their philosophy influence your choice into going into law or getting interested in politics?
Yeah, I would say very much so. Sort of both. I became attracted to Delta, actually, because they were a public service organization. And just when I was just learning about their history, about how the first action that they took as an organization was marching in the Women's Suffrage March in Washington, D.C. in 1913, advocating for women's suffrage. And that just really resonated to me. And just some of the women like Shirley Chisholm and former Senator Barbara Jordan and other just very dynamic women who were involved in policy and politics, who were also members of the organization, is honestly what attracted me to the organization. And so I do, you know, when I'm out and about, I do think about the ideals of the sorority in my service to the community. And it is very important to me. So thank you so much for noticing that and bringing
Let the Delta
that up.
We got it in. We got it in. Absolutely. No, they have. Absolutely. The foundation of Deltas is amazing. I did not pledge. I was in college during the war. We were more anti-war movement than pledging, but the foundations of Delta is fascinating, and we want to have you back on to talk about the Deltas in particular. So, Reverend Ray, I just wanted to jump in before you took her down her political career.
And I'm glad you brought that up, because one of our organizations that we work with, my office, is in the Delta Towers that's in the Washington, D.C., I did not know the history. I thought they, you know, I just thought maybe just a building that they just, hey, let's get this building and rent it out to some people. But I didn't realize the history of the Delta, which we will talk about. But let me ask you, how did a young black girl, a woman, adult, decided that, hey, I'm interested in going to law school? I mean, especially from Duke Ellington, because being a Duke Ellington parent, those kids were not interested in law. You know, so how do you switch from something from a fantasy world to a world of reality?
Well, it's funny. I've always been like super, I would say I'm a proud nerd. And so, you know, I've always been that kind of, I was always kind of that student anyway in school. I loved history. I took AP history in high school. And when I went to college, I actually ended up majoring in history, ended up doing a dual major in history and communications. And it's funny, when I was little, my mom used to tell me all the time that I was going to grow up to be a lawyer. I think it's because her and I used to argue all the time. Something that I never saw initially. And so when I was in college and just kind of thinking about, okay, what am I going to do after college? And I really did get to thinking about, you know, maybe I'll go to law school. It allows me to kind of use the analytical side of my brain a little bit more, as well as learning how to help people in a way that they really do need help. And so that's really kind of what prompted me to go to law school in the beginning. I wasn't necessarily focused on having a career in politics or anything like that. And I always, the politics thing actually came about sort of while I was in law school and kind of after I graduated. So like I said, I went to Pitt, and one of my classmates was actually the son of the former mayor of Pittsburgh, Tyler Geary. And so he was one of my law school classmates. And from him, you know, he was like, hey, you know, invited me to stuff that the Democratic Party there in Pittsburgh was doing. And so just started slowly getting involved that way. And when I came back home, I was telling my mom, I said, you know, I want to continue to be involved. You know, I've been very blessed and fortunate to have gone to college and I have this law degree. And so I want to do something with it, you know. And she reminded me, she was like, oh, well, why don't you reach out to Amber Waller, who used to live across the street when you were growing up? You know, she's really involved. And I don't know if you know Miss Amber, but she at that time was a member of the Democratic Central Committee here in Prince George's County and was on the board of the Prince George's County NAACP. And so I had reached out to her, and I remember, and I was younger than I am now. I was in my early 20s.
Nicely put.
And she said, well, what are you doing next Saturday at 9 o'clock? And, you know, most 20-year-olds on a Saturday morning at 9 a.m. are probably still asleep from the night before. But I met her over at Riverdale Baptist Church, and they were doing a forum on crime going on in the county, and they had a panel of folks speaking. One was at that time who was the congressman, Congressman Albert Wynn, and State's Attorney Glenn Ivey, and a couple of other people. And so they were speaking on the panel about what was going on in Prince George's County. And, you know, she introduced me to a number of folks. And one of the individuals she introduced me to was a guy who was a state delegate by the name of Rashern Baker.
Wow.
Okay.
And so I ended up working for. I was just going to say, so I met him, and he said, you know, we're always looking for good people to help out. And so I ended up volunteering, working with him on things that he was doing, and eventually running for county executive. And that's really just kind of how I got involved. I never really wanted to run for office. I just really wanted to support people who I thought would be good for our community and enact good policy. That's really kind of all that I was really looking to do at that time. So, yeah.
Well, I have a question. You were appointed to a position as delegate on 6 December 2019, our daughter's birthday, the one who was at Duke. So all
oh,
of
wow.
This is,
for her birthday.
Let me ask you this. Yes. What has been most surprising about being a delegate?
So I think sometimes when you're on the outside looking in terms of just like whether you're looking at Congress on TV or looking at Annapolis and things like that, you feel like, and there is a method to the madness, but I think one of the things I was most surprised about is just kind of, it, to some degree, everything is just kind of organized chaos.
That's a good way of
You know, sometimes things move very fast, very rapidly. One minute you're like, what in the world are we going to do? And then it just happens and you just kind of roll with it. Sometimes, and because of the fast-paced nature, it's hard to plan. And for someone like me, I'm a little bit of a planner. I like to kind of map everything out and know what's going to happen before it happens. And, and sometimes that doesn't necessarily work. And so that's one of the things that I've really had to learn and adjust with. Just so I was like, okay, we'll just roll with the punches. Yeah, we don't know. We'll find out 2 hours beforehand what we're going to do. Okay, got it. Okay.
Well, you know, one of the things I admired about you is how you ran your campaign. This was our first time working on a campaign that we did with the councilman that I eventually started working for. But just the way you ran your campaign, I mean, you ran a clean campaign. It wasn't a put-down campaign. And what I want to ask you, I'm sure you've been asked a thousand times, but was also asked of me at a number of occasions, why would you run against three established delegates that people figure they've been there for years and they're going to be there for years. But you didn't put them down that, you know, that they're not doing this and that's why I'm running or anything like that. So think about that. And as we come back on the other side of the break, you know, give me that answer. Because like I said, it wasn't a put down that you said one of these three people was not doing this. And you know, they talk about somebody's mama or something like that. So anyway, you listen to Cadu About Your Dog and You, Captain Earlier, God Dog Users. I am your host, Reverend Radio Ray Razor, and we'll be back with our special guest, Delegate Nicole Williams.
We want to thank our sponsor, Big Bad Wolf, a Primo pet store located in Northwest Washington, D.C. They carry raw, organic, and premium foods. If your dog needs it, they have it. They have store-to-door deliveries in the DMV, so give them a call at 202-747-3434. That's 202-747-3434. And you are listening to CAGDU, About Your Dog and You. Back over to Reverend Ray and our special guest, Delegate Nicole Williams from District Number 22. Reverend Ray.
All right. Thank you. So, Nicole, so would you please be kind enough to share with us, like I say, you had these three delegates from the 22, Prince George County, that have been, you know, been doing this for a number of years, pretty well established. And you didn't come out with a hate campaign that y'all people ain't doing this and ain't doing that and all. But for some reason, you ran. So I don't remember all what your platform was about, mm-hmm. but I know my interaction with you, I like you, and just, you know, and from getting to know you from the Eleanor Roosevelt Democratic Club. And so just share with us, what was your idea or intentions? Because it certainly wasn't the money. But anyway, so go ahead.
Yeah, sure. You know, I ran, like you said, I didn't put anyone down. You know, I think all three of the individuals are good people and things like that. My whole premise was, you know, I think, and I do believe at some point you do need change. Change is not necessarily a bad thing, because you don't, things can get stagnant. It can get kind of old. And I think the way that just as a community and as a state we progress forward is to be willing to say, you know what, maybe it's time for us to do something a little different here. And that was really kind of the premise of my platform. Like, look, I'm not saying that they're horrible people, but I just felt like, you know, we had certain folks who had been in office for over 20 years, over 16 years. And I think the district is changing demographically. A lot of younger people are moving into the district, young folks my age with families and things like that. And I just felt like we just needed an infusion of kind of a fresh look at things, a different way of doing things and different ideas. And I ran based on my platform, like, look, these are the ideas I want to put out on the table that I think we should be doing in Annapolis. As a state, that would be better for all Marylanders and for the people within our district. Because at the end of the day, that's really what that's your job in Annapolis, is to put forth policy. And so it's not about personalities. It's about what's the best policy decisions that we can make for our state. So that's why I ran. You know, I tried to keep it uplifting and upbeat and positive. I've worked on a number of campaigns kind of behind the scenes over the years, and I've seen it both ways. I've seen the Happy Warrior campaign, which is kind of how I'd like to describe us. And I've seen the, you know, the hit pieces, the smear tactics. I've seen them both. And, you know, and that, I thought, for me, I said that's not what I want to do. And so, you know, we got over, I think, 4,700 votes in 2018, probably more than folks probably anticipated that we would get. But I wanted to focus on the issues and focus on the needs of our district. And that's what, and, you know, I was fortunate to get the appointment, and that's what I want to, you know, that's what I try to continue to do to this day. So,
when you did not win then, and I had spoke to you, and I told you, don't you worry, it's gonna be all right.
May I shift just a little bit?
Just one moment, but let me ask this real quick, Ms. Renee. One of my regrets, Nicole, that I waited to 70 to get involved with politics, and I realized that one of the biggest lies that's keep being said to people, especially blacks, that politics are dirty. And I realized if you do not get into politics, you do not control or decision maker when it comes to money for your school, for your community, for your neighborhood. So one of the things that I do now, whenever I have the opportunity to speak to any group or be on any panel, I encourage people to get involved in local politics to make a difference. I see these other persuasions of people bring their young kids to work with them, teaching these kids early about politics and decision making, so they feel entitled to this. With our black community, we just don't understand how important it is to be part of the system, to get in the system and work it. So I really commend you and the other brothers and sisters for getting into this. But I think the biggest thing is that we show young kids in our community that it's nothing wrong with being in politics. Every politician is not a dirty politician. And if we're going to have people, we need to have good people that we vote to put in those positions. But go ahead, Ms. Renee. I'll get off my little soapbox off of that.
Well, I'm just a bill sitting up on Capitol Hill. Now, anybody heard Schoolhouse Rock knows that a bill goes from an idea to a committee and that it's not easy to become a law. So, Nicole, would you share with us House Bill number 234, Harm to Service Animals? How did you decide on doing this, and what is the definition of a service animal that you are using for this idea that is now a bill that we want to become a law?
Yes. So, one, I have to thank our host this afternoon, Reverend Ray, for bringing this matter to my attention. And I think sometimes, and I've heard people say this, and now I'm experiencing it for myself, that sometimes the best bill ideas are the ideas that you get from your constituents and from people out in the community. And so I want to, one, just thank you, Reverend Ray, for bringing this to my attention. And like I said, I said, okay, I'm going to do my research on this. And I did my research on it, and I realized this is something we need to do here in Maryland, definitely. I have disability issues is something just generally I have a personal passion about. My cousin was hit by a bus when she was 18 years old, ended up having to get her right leg amputated. And so even to this day, she uses a prosthesis to get around and things like that. And ever since that, me and my cousins were really close. We used to live together and things like that. And so, just seeing her journey has made me become a lot more aware and in tune to issues around the disability community, or I would say, able, differently able community. So I was happy to put forth a bill that would help folks who, need different assistance and just being able to enjoy their quality of life. And so in terms of service animals, because initially I think we had talked about just seeing eye dogs, and I realize that there's folks out there that have other trained type of service animals, and I don't mean comfort animals, because that's something that's totally different than a service animal. A service animal is definitely an animal that has been specially trained for an extensive amount of time to provide a specific assistance to an individual. You know, I was talking with someone who also has a service dog, but their service dog they use because she has a tendency to have to black out and have fainting spells. And so her service animal alerts her, can tell when she's about to have a fainting spell and alerts her about it and to protect her from passing out someplace where she shouldn't pass out. And so, you know, so that's one of the things I've, you know, learned over the years. And I have another, actually a colleague of mine who, when I was in the central committee, had a service animal because she has a hearing disability. And so her dog was to help her because of her hearing disability. So anyway, so we use the service animal definition as it defined in the by state law, and I can try to pull it up really quickly because it's not embedded in the actual bill itself.
Let me ask while you're looking that up. I was struck by some of the language. The language is very telling. You use language like intentionally or recklessly, killing, injuring, or interfering with the dogs. You know, we live in an area where it's a high concentration of dogs, and oftentimes dogs are off-leash. And people, owners feel that because they can signal the dog to come back, as a rule the dog comes back. But if they see another dog, you know, all bets are off, and they start acting like a dog. So, you know, I was interested in intentionally or recklessly. And it doesn't have to necessarily kill a service animal, but it can injure or interfere with, as you said. So what made you choose those particular kinds of that kind of language to be so encompassing?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, the recklessness isn't, like you said, one may, like, you know, have all the best of intentions. Oh, my dog would never do that. Oh, my dog would never hurt another animal. But we have leash laws for a reason. And when you decide that you do not want to follow those leash laws, now you're acting in a reckless manner that can in turn cause harm to another person or another animal. And so, you know, like I think at the beginning of the hour, Reverend Ray, you had mentioned a friend of yours that had paid $12,000 to because their dog was hurt. And it's not even just about the money in these types of situations. It is about this person's quality of life is now being paused and put on hold because their service animal not only has to go to the veterinarian and get healed, but now also has to possibly be retrained as well. And that takes time. You know, you can't put a dollar figure on that. And so, that's why I use the words that I used in this bill. Because I do, it is important that it's beyond intentional sometimes. And I know that people have the best intentions, but we really need people to really be very mindful about what they're doing with themselves and with their animals as well, and just not engage in reckless behavior. So that was why I used those words that I used.
Yeah, and I think Reverend Ray really made the point at the front end of the program about the value, replacement, loss of wages, the medical expenses, et cetera. Now, can you walk us, we're pushing up against the break, and if we'll finish it on the other side if you don't finish it. What is the process of it going from an idea, you've done your research, and writing the bill, you've done that. What is the process now of making it into law? Do you present it before a committee? Does it go into committee? Yes. Do you present it before your peers? What happens next?
Yeah, so once we file the bill, it gets assigned to a committee. And in this case, this bill is assigned to the Judiciary Committee, which is great because I serve on the Judiciary Committee.
Very convenient.
Reverend Ray, you know how to pick them. And so it will go before the committee. It's actually scheduled for hearing this Thursday, the 28th. that's coming up. And so it'll be heard before the Maryland Judiciary Committee, and they will allow me to speak as well as any other folks who sign up ahead of time to provide. You can provide written testimony, or you can sign up to speak orally and provide oral testimony to all the members of the committee. And then the next step after the committee hearing is that we will have voting sessions scheduled a little later on in the session. And then this bill, hopefully my chairman will agree to place this bill on the voting list. And then my committee will either vote favorably for the bill or unfavorably for the bill. If it gets a favorable vote by the committee, then it will go to the floor of the Maryland House.
Okay, well, okay. And I want to come back on the other side and talk about the comment period and what people should be saying. With your permission, Reverend Ray,
sure.
We'll go yeah. right into our station ID. You are listening to CAGDU, About Your Dog and You. CAGDU is Capital Area Dog Guide Users, and we are located in the nation's capital. So tell us about the comment period. What should it contain? Is it a verbal presentation? Is it a written presentation? And how important is this to influencing the committees to make up their mind about the issue?
Yeah, I think it's very important. I always, you know, people think the oral is more important than the written. I sometimes think the written testimony is actually somewhat a little bit more important. And the written, with the oral testimony, you have a time limit in which you can speak. And so with our committee, folks would be limited to only 2 minutes. But with the written testimony, you can write as much as you want to write and put as much information as you want to put in. And I know I read the written testimony, and I like to kind of go through it before the hearing. And my colleague, I know a number of my colleagues do the same thing. And so I sometimes feel like the written testimony is a little bit more important because that's kind of the first your first impression to the members of the committee. They're going to see that before they even hear the oral testimony. And then I feel like the oral testimony should kind of like seal the deal.
Right.
Right.
Because you do have such a limited amount of time in which to speak. Now, after you speak, members of the committee can ask questions, and some of them may ask some questions, which will allow you to elaborate some, but you might not always have that opportunity to answer questions. And so I think that that's why I feel like the written is so much more important, because you can get out as much as you want to get out without having constraints of time limits or anything like that.
And the written, you would have to pull up a document or something to send it to an email address or something like that.
Yeah. Well, with both, so we have a new system we're doing this session because everything's being done virtually. They're asking people to sign up 48 hours before the bill hearing. It's between the hours of 10 a.m. and 3 p.m. So for this bill, between 10 a.m. and 3 p.m. on Tuesday, you would have to go to this website called mymga.com, I believe it is. And if you don't have an account, you will have to create an account. Maybe that's not the right link. I'll have to find it. I thought it was my MG,
okay.
Or maybe it's my MG.
If you could send it to us, we will get it out.
Yeah,
because,
because
we post this show on our website, so people listen
okay.
to the shows afterwards. Yeah. So we would do that, post the shows on our website. After you go through the House, then does it have to go to the Senate as well?
It does. It does have to go through the Senate. So it will, when it comes up so it's already gone to first reader on the House floor. And once it goes to first reader, that's when it gets assigned to a committee. So then if it comes out of committee, it'll go to second reader on the House floor. People can debate if they want on second reader, though most of the time they do not. And then once it goes to third reader, that'll be the final vote on the bill. And if it passes on third reader, then it would go across the street to the Senate side. Then we would have a second hearing before the Senate Judicial Proceedings Committee. on the center side, and it would have to go through that same cycle. So I think it's really good that we are getting this bill hearing so early on in the session, so that way it'll have time to kind of go through that whole process. And so, but I feel really the feedback that I've been getting from my colleagues on this bill has been really positive and really good. I'm really excited about this bill. And so hopefully we should be able to get it passed. I don't want to say definitely, but I do feel very positive about this bill. So,
do we have a sponsor on the Senate side?
We do not. And I was trying to find a sponsor on the Senate side. Oh, you know what? I take that back. We do. I found one at the last minute on last Friday. I take that back. So Senator Michael Jackson, who's a brand new senator in the Maryland General Assembly, used to be a state delegate. He actually agreed to be the cross file on this bill. And I'm so happy that he agreed to it, because the committee he sits on is the Judicial Proceedings Committee, which is the committee that this bill will go to.
This is my last question, and I'm going to let Reverend Ray finish it up. Your goal for this to take effect is 1 October 2021. And which is also Meet the Blind Month and Disability Employment Month. Given the pandemic-induced delays, is that still on target, do you think?
I think it is. October 1st is our standard bill starting date here in the state of Maryland. Even when we shut down in 2020 early, any bills that did get passed, they still went into effect on October the 1st. I don't foresee that changing. I also don't foresee the governor vetoing this bill. It doesn't have what they call a fiscal note to it, meaning it's not going to cost the state any money for them to enact this bill. And so because of that, I feel pretty positive about it.
Okay. Well, you know, I say if white people involved, it won't have no problem, but they love dogs. they love animals, but I'd be afraid to put a civil rights bill up against a bill for a dog. I know which one to get voted on, favorably. But he'll get another special day. The 28th is my brother's birthday, so I told they're going to be voting on my brother's birthday. I thought they're going to be voting about dogs on his birthday. But this is really, really, really special. And I had a couple of dog schools call me because they have a, I guess it's an app or something. The people that and the advocates that work on these different things have an app. And anytime anything that's put in about service dog, it flags on their computer. So she called me from seeing that guide dog school and say, Reverend Wright, I see y'all had this hearing and this bill was put in and all. And I was like, what? And this was from New Jersey now. So,
okay.
So
oh, good.
Really
wow.
Yeah. And then the lady from New and one from California, they just working on their bill in California.
Okay.
They've been working for
okay.
years and they're working all the specifics out. Alexa, computer, stop. So that's good. I appreciate that. And so, so now you're going to be able to give us the information how to do the send in the information for the writing as well as the information for this virtual now. So we'll get that from you. But we can pass it out through the different organizations and all.
You got to go to the website. You have to create an account, sign up to testify. And once you create an account, you can, write up your testimony and upload it to the system. And then if you sign up to testify, you'll get sent a Zoom link for the bill hearing on Thursday. And that'll come from the committee. So, yes.
Okay. So, Ms. Renee, do you have that information to go to that website, or we need to get back to get it?
No, Ms. Nicole said she would send it to us, and we will post it straight away.
Okay.
It, it, sounds a little bit challenging, so we'd better get it sooner rather than later.
Yeah.
So we can
and we'll, and
yeah,
we'll get
I definitely
about,
will.
We'll,
I do
we'll,
have a
we'll
question.
Get other, go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, can we sign up one account and several people testify under it, or must each person create their own account?
Each person has to create their own account, unfortunately. I know. I asked that question. I even asked, did I sign the people up for them just to try to make it easier on folks, but I was told that I could not do that, and I was told that, yes, each individual person has to sign themselves up, unfortunately, is how this works. So I apologize for that, but...
Yeah,
we've
get
got
a couple
some good technical
good at,
people in
they,
the community. They
yeah.
can figure it out. Yeah. Yes, indeed.
And they can help
okay.
other people.
Yeah,
yeah,
and you can call my
people.
Office, too, for any help as well.
Okay. All righty. So, Ms. Nicole, just before we close out, we really appreciate you coming on and getting to know you a little bit. Tell your mama you did a good job. And... And like I say, we post this on our website, and we always send our guests a link that they can do with it what they want to do. They're not ashamed of being on the show. And share with us what this pandemic and all, we know revenue is down and all of that and everything, but just a quick overall, what is Maryland looking like? The state of Maryland.
Our revenues are down, but it's not as bad as we had originally anticipated. And so we are going to have a little bit of a deficit, but not a huge one for the upcoming fiscal year. The concern becomes, I guess, for the 2023 fiscal year is what the state budget folks are really worried about. But we'll see. The governor released his draft budget. I think that was on Wednesday. So we're still kind of digging through it to see what the governor has requested. And we will take it from there. But revenues are down. We're all tightening up a little bit, but not as bad as we thought it would be. So.
And just one other question. In terms of land, Prince George County still has a lot of land, right, that they have set aside that we don't have all this concrete going like Montgomery County. I don't think they have any land, extra land to build anything other than up. So a lot of people have been asking why do a lot of developers come to Prince George County? And I explained to them because I think we have a lot, not think, I know now being in the council, we have a lot of land set aside that we can use, right?
Yeah, we do. We have a lot more free developable land than Montgomery County does. And so that's definitely the District of Columbia. So that's why we see a lot of developers coming here, because it's so close to the nation's capital. It's such prime real estate. So.
Okay. All right. So thank you so much. And we know how busy you all are. We thank you so much for your time. And we look to talk to you again about the Deltas. Next time around with something special coming up. So thank you, Ms. Nicole, and Happy New Year's to you. And you being a Democrat, we're looking at a whole nother new world. All right, thank you. Thank you.
Thank
all right,
you.
God bless
all
right. you. All right,
you
God
too.
Bless you.
All right, bye-bye.
All right. So you've been listening to CAGDU about your dog and you. With our very special guest, a delegate, Nicole Williams from 20. From District 22 of Prince George County and the state of Maryland, talking about the Guide Dog Protection Bill. We'll be getting you more information about that. Of course, you can always go to our website with Ms. Renee. We'll give you all that information. So, this is Reverend Ray, and my time is up. I thank you all for your time. Until the next time, you know what I always like to say. You can hug your honey, but pet your pooch. Miss Renee.
You have been listening to CAGDU about your dog and you. Capital Area Dog Guide Users. Located in the nation's capital. We are heard here every Friday at 3 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Have a question or a show idea? you can contact us in all the usual ways. Our email is cagdu2020@gmail.com. That's cagdu2020@gmail.com. Or call us at 301-263-7371. That's 301-263-7371. Go to our website to listen to past shows or give us a call and we will send you a link. Again, we thank you. We'll see you here next Friday for a new and exciting show.